Chapter 2. There had been a little unpleasantness when he had ordered Dirk to stay with the wagons. In consequence, Sean was in an evil mood as he crossed the bridge on the Apis and rode into the city the following morning. Beside him, Imbijani ran to keep pace with his horse. Deep in his own thoughts, Sean turned into Church Street before he noticed the unusual activity about him. A column of horsemen forced him to rein his horse to the side of the road. As they passed, Sean examined them with interest. Burghers in a motley of homespun and store clothes, riding in a formation which might imaginatively have been called a column of fours. But what excited Sean's curiosity was their numbers. By God, there must be 2,000 of them at least. From lads to greybeards, each of them was festooned with bandoliers of ammunition, and beside each left knee, the butt of a bolt-action Mauser rifle stuck up from its scabbard. Blanket rolls tied to the saddles, canteens and cooking pots clattering, they filed past. There was no doubting it. This was a war commando. From the sidewalk, women and a few men called comment at them. Geluk hoor, shoot straight. Spoedige terugkomst. And the commandos laughed and shouted back. Sean stooped to a pretty girl who stood beside his horse. She was waving a red scarf, and suddenly Sean saw that though she smiled, her eyelashes were loaded with tears, like dew on a blade of grass. "Where are they going?" Sean raised his voice above the uproar. She lifted her head, and the movement loosed a tear. It dropped down her cheek, slid from her chin, and left a tiny damp spot on her blouse. "To the train, of course."
"The train? Which train?"
"Look, here comes the guns." In consternation, Sean looked up as the guns rumbled past. Two of them, uniformed gunners in blue, frogged with gold, sitting stiffly to attention on the carriages, the horses leaning forward against the immense weight of the guns, tall wheels shod with steel, bronze glittering on the breeches in contrast to the sombre grey of the barrels. "My God," breathed Sean. Then, turning back to the girl, he grasped her shoulder and shook it in his agitation.
"Where are they going? Tell me quickly, where?"
"Mynheer," she bridled at his touch and wriggled away from it. "Please, I'm sorry, you must tell me," Sean called after her as she disappeared into the crowd. A minute longer, Sean sat stupefied. Then his brain began to work again. It was war, then. But where? And against whom? Surely no tribal rising would call out this array of strength. Those guns were the most modern weapons Sean could conceive. Oh, no, no, this was a white man's war. Against the Orange Republic. Impossible, they were brothers. Against the British, then? The idea appalled him. And yet, 5 years ago, there had been rumours. It had happened before. He remembered 1895 and the Jameson raid. Anything could have happened during the years he had been cut off from civilization. And now he had stumbled innocently into the midst of it. Quickly, he considered his own position. He was British, born in Natal under the Union Jack. He looked like a burgher, spoke like one, rode like one. He was born in Africa, and he had never left it. But technically, he was just as much an Englishman as if he had been born within the sound of Bow Bells. Just supposing it was war between the Republic and Britain, and just supposing the Boers caught him, what would they do with him? Confiscate his wagons and his ivory, certainly. Throw him into prison, perhaps. Shoot him as a spy, possibly. "I've got to get the hell out of here," he mumbled. And then to Imbijani, "Come on, back to the wagons, quickly." Before they reached the bridge, he changed his mind. He had to learn with certainty what was happening. There was one person he could go to, and he must take the risk. "Imbijani, go back to the camp. Find Nkosazana Dirk, and keep him there, even if you have to tie him. Speak to no man, and as you value your life, let Dirk speak with no man. It is understood?" "It is understood, Nkosi." And Sean, to all appearances another burgher among the thousands of burghers, worked his way slowly through the crowds and the press of wagons towards a general dealer's store at the top end of the town near the railway station. Since Sean had last seen it, the sign above the entrance had been freshly painted in red and gold. "I. Goldberg, importer and exporter, dealing in mining machinery, merchant and wholesaler, purchasing, agent, gold, precious stones, hides and skins, ivory and natural produce." Despite this war, or because of it, Mr. Goldberg's emporium was doing good business. It was crowded, and Sean drifted unnoticed among the customers, searching quietly for the proprietor. He found him selling a bag of coffee beans to a gentleman who was plainly sceptical of its quality. The discussion of the merits of Mr. Goldberg's coffee beans, as opposed to those of his competitor across the street, was becoming involved and technical. Sean leaned against a shelf full of merchandise, packed his pipe, lit it, and while he waited, he watched Mr. Goldberg in action. The man should have been a barrister. His argument was strong enough to convince first Sean and finally the customer. The latter paid, slung the bag over his shoulder, and grumbled his way out of the shop, leaving Mr. Goldberg glowing pink and perspiring in the flush of achievement. "You haven't lost any weight, Izzy," Sean greeted him. Goldberg peered at him uncertainly over his gold-framed spectacles, beginning to smile until suddenly he recognized Sean. He blinked with shock, jerked his head in a gesture of invitation, so his jowls wobbled and disappeared into the back office. Sean followed him.
"Are you mad, Mr. Courtney?"
Goldberg was waiting for him, quivering with agitation.
"If they catch you..."
"Listen, Izzy, I arrived last night. I haven't spoken to a white man in 4 years. What the hell is going on here?"
"You haven't heard?"
"No, damn it, I haven't."
"It's war, Mr. Courtney."
"I can see that, but where? Against whom?"
"On all the borders. Natal, the Cape."
"Against?"
"The British Empire."
Goldberg shook his head as though he did not believe his own statement.
"We have taken on the whole British Empire."
"We?" Sean asked sharply.
"The Transvaal Republic and the Orange Free State. Already we have won great victories. Ladysmith is besieged. Kimberley, Mafeking."
"You, personally?"
"I was born here in Pretoria. I am a burgher."
"Are you going to turn me in?"
"No, no, of course not. You have been a good customer of mine for years."
"Thanks, Izzy. Look, I've got to get out of here as fast as I can."
"It would be wise."
"What about my money at the Volkskasse? Can I get it out?" Izzy shook his head sadly.
"They've frozen all enemy accounts." "Damn it! God damn it!"
Sean swore bitterly. And then, "Izzy, I've got 20 wagons and 10 tons of ivory parked out there on the edge of town. Are you interested?"
"How much?"
10,000 for the lot. Oxen, wagons, ivory, the lot."
"It would not be patriotic, Mr. Courtney,"
Goldberg decided reluctantly.
"Trading with the enemy. Besides, I have only your word that it's 10 tons.
"Hell, Izzy, I'm not the British Army. That lot is worth 20,000 quid.
"You want me to buy sight unseen, no questions asked? All right, I give you 4,000, gold."
"7.
4.5,
countered Izzy.
"You bastard."
4.5. "No, damn you, 5, growled Sean.
5?
5.
"All right, 5.
"Thanks, Izzy.
Pleasure, Mr. Courtney."
Sean described the location of his lager hurriedly. "You can send someone out to pick it up. I'm going to run for the Natal border as soon as it's dark."
"Keep off the roads and well clear the railway. Joubert has 30,000 men in northern Natal massed around Ladysmith and along the Tugela Heights."
Goldberg went to the safe and fetched 5 small canvas bags from it.
"Do you want to check?"
"I'll trust you as you trusted me. Goodbye, Izzy." Sean dropped the heavy bags down the front of his shirt and settled them under his belt.
"Good luck, Mr. Courtney."